to be American.
This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
Welcome to Democracy Optimist, where we discuss the current state of American democracy and even provide a dose of hope along the way. Democracy must have at least two robust parties that both agree on certain core values, in particular the importance of democratic institutions and in accepting election outcomes. That is one reason why I like to highlight pro-democracy officials from both major political parties. Today's guest, Republican Stephen Ritscher, epitomizes that ideal. From 2021 to early 2025, Stephen served as the county recorder, where he administered elections, in Maricopa County, Arizona, which includes Phoenix. After strongly defending the integrity of the 2020 election, he lost the 2024 Republican primary election for his office, and he still served the voters admirably in running the 2024 election in the nation's second-largest voting jurisdiction. Ritscher is currently a senior practice fellow in American democracy at the Ash Center of Democratic Governance and Innovation at the Harvard Kennedy School. Stephen, welcome to Democracy Optimist.
Thank you very much for having me.
So let's first talk about your time as the county recorder in Maricopa County, Arizona. That's Phoenix. It's the nation's second largest voting jurisdiction, about 2.6 million voters, I think. Why did you want that job? And you know, what was it like?
It's actually about the same size total population-wise of Kentucky, 4.6 million people. And some of our best athletes, including Devin Booker, are from the University of Kentucky. And so, you know, trying to build that Phoenix to Kentucky connection a little bit. But I ran because, to me, it was a combination of three things that I care about and know about, which is the first is politics. You have to run for the office and you oversee a subject matter that has some inherent politics to it. The second is I'm an attorney, and what you're doing in effect is just taking state statute and implementing it. And so reading the law and applying the law was appealing to me. And then third, I have a background in business. And so the management component of just running an office of 160 full-time employees and building a better mousetrap was something that was appealing to me. And I thought it was just like this feel-good, fairly non-controversial thing, you know, will allow people to engage in the democratic process and vote. And what could be controversial about that?
Yeah, you quickly learned, I guess, how things got very controversial. And is that one thing that really changed from when you took office to your, throughout your 4 years there, is just, you know, how you were sort of unfortunately embroiled in controversy given the state of our politics?
Perhaps things are just becoming more polarizing, more intense generally in politics. And certainly with respect to election administration since, you know, 2018 in particular, I think it's picked up. But I couldn't have possibly imagined when I was running in 2020, the fallout from the 2020 election and how important that would be to the American political conversation, and just what a large role Arizona was going to play in that conversation. And then within Arizona, Maricopa County, and that we would have these post-election audits, and there would be so many questions about the 2020 election and so much emotion about the 2020 election. So no, I did not imagine that. And it was both a curse and a blessing. I got to be part of a very important conversation, and then I got to see some ugly sides of humanity.
Yeah, and we'll talk about a little bit of that as well. You know, you've been open about that stuff. But let's just talk about some of the nitty-gritty on election administration and some of the misinformation out there. And one of the issues that you faced a lot was involving technology. And there's these claims of paper ballots in Arizona that had paper from bamboo from China, right, was one of the conspiracy theories. There was issues about voting machines. There were some concerns about the printing of ballots in 2022 and conspiracy theories there. How did you handle all of that?
We tried to offer information, as much information as possible. And I think one of the things that we're best known for in Maricopa County was just bringing people into the facility, showing them the people and the machinery behind the process. But if you'll remember to the days and the weeks and the months after the 2020 election, one of the biggest topics was Dominion voting systems. Mm-hmm. And this is a election tabulation company that Maricopa County did employ for the 2020 elections. We used Dominion tabulation equipment. And a lot of allegations were regarding hacking or malware or other electronic interference. And one of the things that I want to consistently point out when I'm talking about elections is that in the United States, 97% of voting jurisdictions use paper ballots. So in Arizona, you hand mark a paper ballot and then the tabulation machine reads the ovals. So even if we're talking about hacking or about electronic Armageddon, you would always have an auditable, immutable paper trail that you can go back to. And in fact, that's why post-election hand count audits are very important, so that you can confirm that nothing was done to manipulate the machinery. So for the people who say, you know, we need to have paper ballots, I say all the security professionals agree with you. And fortunately, the vast, vast majority of American voting jurisdictions do have paper ballots.
Now, in Arizona, you all have a lot more paper ballots, I think, than many other states, given that anyone can request to have a mail-in ballot. And that means it takes longer to count the votes as well. In 2024, election results in Arizona were finally released about 10 days after Election Day. At least Maricopa County, I believe, was 10 days after. And, you know, I think one of the problems with these conspiracy theories is that when people don't know, rumors run rampant. So is that a problem? Is there something that election officials should do? Or, you know, should we just be all a little more patient to make sure we get this right?
I do think it is a problem, but it is born out of a understandable situation in which legislators, mostly in the Western United States, prioritize access and ease of voting. And so in Arizona, yes, the vast majority of our registered voters participate by mail ballot, as is true of Oregon, Washington, California, Nevada, Utah.
Although Utah just changed its rule to take away a lot of mail-in balloting access, yeah. Right? So we'll take Utah off that list in the future.
And then the other feature that Arizona has is we have some very close elections. Not historically, but over the last 10 years, Arizona has become quite competitive on a statewide basis. And so when we release results at 8 p.m. on election night, which is the first time we can release results, we have probably 65% of the total results are already available. But you're talking about close races, then you need a higher percentage. You need 95% plus to be able to call some of these close races that are within a few percentage points. And the situation we have in Arizona is if somebody takes a mail ballot and drops it off on election day, then we still have to do all the things that we would do for a mail ballot that's dropped off a week before election day, which includes scanning it in to make sure somebody didn't vote twice, also vote in person, which includes verifying your signature to confirm your identity, which includes taking it out of the ballot packet and making it flat and smooth and undamaged and get ready for tabulation. And only then can you tabulate it. And so while we release a lot of results on election night, some of those close contests weren't called in Arizona until about 48 hours later. And then, yes, in Arizona, I think it was about 10 days until every single last one ballot was counted, although usually they call the races within like 48 hours.
Sure. So does that mean that we should move away from the mail-in balloting system like Utah is doing? Should we be changing the system? You sort of suggested that the Western states are maybe too focused on access.
That is my opinion. This is a legitimate public policy conversation, but academic literature shows that if you don't know the winner on election night or within the first 24 hours, then we do see a dip in confidence in our election processes. I think that confidence, especially over the last few years, has become very important. And so I think that we should have a conversation about how much convenience are we willing to trade to have faster election results. And in my opinion, we should roll back mail voting just a little bit to say, if you're going to vote by mail, you have to get it back at least 72 hours in advance of election day so that we can have a higher percentage of results available on election night so that hopefully all of those races can be called so that hopefully we can have greater confidence in our election systems.
That's interesting. I mean, my perspective would be that, you know, we need to create a culture where we can accept that election officials are doing the right thing and are counting every vote properly, and we just need to be patient. I remember during COVID in the primary in 2020 and COVID, here in Kentucky, the Secretary of State simply said, we'll have results to you a week later after voting was done, and people grumbled about it, but I think basically people accepted that was the process that needed to happen.
And a lot of voting rights groups, and especially the Democratic Party in Arizona, would say exactly that. And they would say, you know what? What's more important is that we make it as convenient as possible. And we need to just socialize why it is that we might not have all the results on election night. And to which I say, that's a legitimate public policy conversation. I just want people to appreciate why the system works the way it does, and then they can engage in that public policy conversation and not feel like it's a black box where something must be wrong. Because remember, as anyone who listens to this show would know, elections are largely governed by state law, meaning that what happens in Arizona is different than what happens in Kentucky is different than what happens in Michigan. And so increasingly when people get their news through a national newscape and they have, well, Florida knows who won the presidential contest in Florida, but not in Arizona, they assume, you know, something must be wrong, not that there are differences in state law.
Let's talk about what it means to be a pro-democracy Republican. I think you've been called a democracy defender. You lost the Republican primary election in 2024 for your seat. Don't mean to keep bringing that up as the negative thing here, but I think it's important to discuss in this political climate, what does it mean to be a pro-democracy Republican, and what's the winning strategy to convince voters to regain trust in electoral politics, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican?
Yeah. So on the losing point, I think you can lose a race and not be a loser. And I think that politicians need to be comfortable with that. And so I accept that I lost my race. I've moved on. It doesn't define who I am. And I think if you put all of your stock in simply being an elected official, I think that is problematic for various reasons. Now, as to being a pro-democracy Republican, for me, what President Trump said about the 2020 election and the continued resistance of conceding to President Biden and what happened on January 6, 2021 were unforgivable offenses to me, such that though I was a loyal down-the-ticket Republican voter, I couldn't be on board with that. And over the last 4 years, the party has actually probably moved closer to President Trump defining what the party is. And so for me, that created a little bit of an awkwardness, I suppose I would say, where I define myself more by Reagan Republicans and maybe John McCain Republicans than I do Trump Republicans. And what I would mean when I say pro-democracy Republicans, what I would say that put the system and the defense of the institution and the truth about our elections as a priority over the success of one candidate or a political party.
So what do we do to create more pro-democracy Republicans in the way that you've described? You know, to sustain democracy, I guess what I'm getting at is you sort of need a cross-partisan coalition of Democrats and Republicans who accept election results, even if they, you know, don't win that election, as you've described. And I think the public consciousness suggests that it's Republicans or maybe Trumpism that has gone down the path of election denial. And yet there are lots of people just like you who are maybe disillusioned with that ideal, but still find a lot of value in the conservative Reagan Republicanism concept. So how can we create more pro-democracy Republicans, or maybe how can pro-democracy Republicans win in this political environment?
Well, I would say don't wait around for politicians to do it just because it's the right thing. I think most politicians respond to electoral incentives because you're an academic and you've read a lot of political science literature. There's a famous political scientist named David Mayhew who would say politicians are single-minded seekers of re-election. And I've found there to be a lot of truth to that. And so if you want to have more of those types of politicians who value those types of values, then I think voters have to demand it. And I would have thought that lying about the 2020 election would have been disqualifying, or January 6th, I would have thought would have been disqualifying. But clearly it wasn't. President Trump lawfully, fairly won re-election in 2024. And so I don't think that a lot of Republicans are now just saying, you know, we got to get back to that. I think they're looking around and they're saying, you know, we won the United States Senate, we won the United States House, and we took the White House, and we're going to govern in this way. And so until voters say this is important and you can't cross this line, then I think it will continue this way.
So it really is up to the people, right? I think is the message here. So it's up to democracy, as, you know, understood as the people being sovereign. I think we probably can't have a conversation with you without discussing the defamation suit that you filed against fellow Republican Carrie Lake in Arizona when she falsely claimed that you, quote, intentionally sabotaged the election after she lost in 2022 running for governor. So I guess, you know, one, kind of what was your experience there? But the broader question is are defamation suits the way to handle election lies? And what can we do as a country to regain election trust?
I do think defamation lawsuits are a potential tool that can be used to sort through this increasingly complicated and challenging media ecosystem where we can't separate out fact from fiction. And so I think if you think of Dominion, again, to talk about Dominion suing Fox after the 2020 election, and they settled for a little bit shy of $800 million. Two election workers from Georgia sued Rudy Giuliani, and I think that they got a judgment of about $60 million. I think that's going to make people like Fox and Rudy Giuliani think twice, or at least be a little more careful before they broadcast provably false allegations regarding Dominion, or Shay Moss was the name of one of the election workers. So following the 2022 election, Carrie Lake, who was the Republican nominee for governor in Arizona, made a number of election challenges, and that's fine. She alleged a number of things in court, and that's fine. But she lost on all of those things, and all of those things were proven to be false in court and were proven to be false in post-election assessments. She continued to make those statements. She made them to my detriment in terms of things that people would say and do to me. And they were very serious accusations, accusing me of very serious crimes. And she was raising money off of it. I appeared in a book that she published about it. And I didn't know how else to get her to stop. And so I finally sued for defamation, and we wound up winning on the merits. And then it was proceeding to a damages calculation. And then she and I settled at that point.
So you're at the Ash Center at Harvard now. What's your focus these days?
Democracy and elections. And so it's really wonderful. And, you know, Harvard's obviously been in the news a lot lately, which has been unfortunate because I hope to have a nice, quiet 2025 and that I was leaving politics behind. But happily, I am not at the helm of that conversation. And so mostly I can think more broadly about how we structure our elections. What are some of the big topics in election administration, and then also get involved in some of the latest items that happen in election administration. So right now I'm involved in this North Carolina Supreme Court ongoing contest regarding the last judge on their Supreme Court, or there's some litigation that's going on in Georgia that I've commented on. And so some of that stuff, but then also thinking about what do we want elections to look like in 2044? Because the last 4 years, we've been talking a lot about how do we survive the next election cycle? How do we improve confidence marginally for the next election cycle? How do we replace the equipment that's a little too old for next election cycle? But we haven't been thinking big. And so this has given me an opportunity to press pause on some of the daily stuff and instead ask those questions and then put together some working groups and put together some papers and do the academic thing, as you know much better than I, and hopefully generate some good ideas.
Let me ask you one more question. You know, we call this show Democracy Optimists. Are you optimistic about voting elections, especially thinking about what happened with you in 2024 and with the election results as you've described them?
I am optimistic about the mechanics of our elections. I think that the history of American elections is not the prettiest. We've had open fraud at times. You know, I'm talking about like sort of the machine politics or the corruption of Tammany Hall, lots of historical incidences. We've had lots of historical incidents of voter suppression, both by law, that certain groups of people, whether it's women, whether it's Black Americans, just couldn't vote. And then later, de facto voter suppression, and certainly the whole civil rights movement that was born out of that. But the trajectory, by and large, has been to have a safer, more accurate, more accessible voting system in the United States. And I think that we're still going on that trajectory. Now, regarding how we're voting and how we're having our conversations about politics, that I'm pretty nervous about. And I think that if you look at the statistics of people who are, say, it's acceptable to shout someone out or to use violence if they have different political views, some of the things that I think we would have thought were completely unacceptable before are now happening on a regular basis. And I just don't think we're having healthy, productive governing conversations. And I don't think that everyone who gets into office is thinking of the best interest in the country right now. And so that I'm not as optimistic about.
Very interesting perspectives here. Stephen Richer once administered elections in Phoenix and is currently a senior practice fellow in American democracy at the Harvard Kennedy School. Stephen, thank you so much for joining Democracy Optimist.
Thank you very much. And I will say, I'm optimistic about UK basketball for next year. I think Elite Eight or better.
You heard it here first. Thanks again.
Josh, you just talked with Stephen Richer, former county recorder of Maricopa County, Arizona. He's now with the Ask Center of Democratic Governance and Innovation at Harvard. And you touched on something really interesting, I thought, how the speed of election results influence confidence or trust in the system. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a big debate right now in the election community, especially with this idea that perhaps all ballots should be in by election day as opposed to postmarked by election day and let them come in a few states later. There's actually a lawsuit in which a federal court struck down Mississippi's law that let ballots come in after election day so long as they were postmarked by election day. You know, it's, I think, a competing concern. On the one hand, I really do think we need to improve and increase the access for voting. On the other hand, I understand what Stephen is saying, is that the longer it takes to process these ballots, the more, you know, rumors start to spread. So I think it's a balance here. I would put the thumb for me on the scale of improving access and you know, having these conversations about how this is exactly how the election process works. We need to spend the time to verify all of the ballots. And that might mean you might not know the result on election night. And, you know, that's okay.
We've heard people like Senator Lisa Murkowski say that people in her party, the Republican Party, are afraid to speak out in opposition to this administration. What did Richard say about how pro-democracy Republicans like him can win in a political environment that is increasingly accepting of an authoritarian style of governance?
I think his example is really important. As someone who is a Republican, someone who has spoken out about his conservative values, and yet says, you know, the things that happened with respect to calling the 2020 election into account are just not okay for democracy. What happened on January 6th, 2021 are not okay for democracy. I think there's probably, and I'm just speculating here, but I'm guessing there is a kind of silent majority of people who all agree to this ideal of democracy, whether they're on the left, center, or right. And it's those people that I think are going to put the country on this path to sustaining democracy in a more healthy way. So, you know, I was excited to interview him and to hear and to learn from him, because I think we need to lift up the voices of pro-democracy Republicans even more than our society is doing right now.
Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas, writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm Tom Martin, your series producer. Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Mason Graber and Stephen Dabney, research assistants, Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer, Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. Democracy Optimist is a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions for Richmond, Kentucky-based public radio station WEKU.